All right, I'll start announcing this next case while you all get settled. This is 2014 SC-123. This is the City of Inglewood versus Dalvin Burrell in the ICAO. May I have any of the appearances, please, for the petitioner? Go ahead first. Thank you. And for the respondent?
Neil O'Toole, appearing on behalf of firefighter Hutter.
All right. And you all know the drill. 22 minutes. Reserve your time, please. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This case is very similar to the ones we've heard before. It involves interpretations of Section 841-209-2B and whether respondents presented sufficient evidence to overcome the statutory presumption that claimant's non-occupational risk factors were the more likely cause of his melanoma. And here in this case, it's a little bit different. The ALJ's order is not as clear in that the ALJ did not specifically spell out that we as the employer are required to prove an actual specific cause, as alternative to the firefighting cause of the claimant's melanoma. But ALJ, in his order, determined that risk does not equate cause, and therefore it is our position that he did not give the appropriate consideration to the risk factor evidence of risk factors outside of firefighting presented by respondents and burdened the respondents with establishing the exact cause of melanoma. It is our position that this order at best is unclear as to what evidence the ALJ actually considered as relevant and admissible in determining whether the employer overcame the statutory presumption. And therefore, we have requested that this case be remanded back to the ALJ for reconsideration of risk factor evidence as sufficient and probable evidence of an alternative cause of the claimant's melanoma as permitted by the Court of Appeals in the Zukowski case. This case is similar to the Zukowski case in that all experts agree no medical evidence exists to establish the exact cause of cancer. This case has a couple different risk factors. This individual was a farmer and worked a lifetime of, or a significant amount of time in the sun as a construction worker. The sun exposure was a significant risk factor here. Dr. Milliken testified that the claimant's sun exposure was 90% most likely the cause of his melanoma. The individual's melanoma tumor was actually tested or DNA sequenced and came up BRAF negative. And that is significant because there's a study, the Curtin study, that showed BRAF mutations are frequent in melanoma tumors that occur in non-sun damaged areas of the skin. So if you have a BRAF negative tumor, that is indicative that people with chronic sun damaged skin have BRAF negative melanoma tumors. And Dr. Mayer, claims expert, testified that the study showed that 85% of people with chronic sun damaged skin are BRAF negative. So the risk factors presented were slightly different here. I think it's also important to note that Dr. Mayer opined the claimant's increased relative risk for melanoma in this case, based on his significant sun exposure, was 15 times higher or 1,500% higher. And this is also evidenced by the claimant's history, an 11-year history of skin lesions and basal cell carcinomas for which he treated prior to filing a workers' compensation claim and which he stipulated were not a result of firefighting. Again, the order is unclear as to what evidence the ALJ considered in determining whether the respondent appropriately overcame or rebutted the presumption. In looking at the order itself, paragraph 10 of the order in the findings of fact section, the ALJ found claimant's expert, Dr. Mayer, opined that the cause of the claimant's melanoma was unknown and that she acknowledged the claimant had a considerably increased relative risk of melanoma based on the various risk factors, including his age at diagnosis, his race, and his significant sun exposure. We move on to paragraph 9 of the order in the conclusions of law section, and it is our position that ALJ erroneously found Dr. Mayer's testimony more credible based on her testimony that risk does not equate to medical causation and the cause of the claimant's melanoma is unknown, yet the evidence of the BRAF negative tumor and his significant sun exposure is still insufficient to overcome the presumption. You go down to paragraph 12 of the findings of fact, and the ALJ incorrectly credits Dr. Mayer's testimony that this does not equate to cause, no matter the number of risk factors, where the cause remains unknown. These findings suggest that the ALJ ultimately determined risk factor evidence was irrelevant because such evidence could never conclusively establish the actual cause of an individual's melanoma. And I think these statements also suggest that the ALJ disregarded any possibility that risk factors could constitute proof of an alternative cause, which we argue is an appropriate standard to present here, risk factors of an alternative cause pursuant to the performance of the evidence standard. We simply cannot tell from this order what the ALJ was thinking or what he actually considered as relevant admissible evidence in determining whether respondents overcame the statutory presumption. And I wanted to note at the outset that as in the last case, this case, we stipulated at the outset of the hearing that the presumption applied, and therefore it was respondents' burden to overcome that statutory presumption. Therefore, we're simply requesting a remand in this case back to ALJ for reconsideration of the evidence.
All right. Thank you.
No further questions.
How about that? You were finished, I guess. Thanks. You do have 16 minutes if you want to respond. Mr. O'Toole?
Thank you. And I'm going to get back again to the question of how this type of case specifically differs from a regular application of the disease state, even assuming one where there's mold or asbestosis and so on. What is easily forgotten is that there are thresholds here which make it harder on the firefighters. They've got to be going, being a firefighter for five or more years at the time of being hired. They have to have a clean bill of health that this doesn't exist. And it's the only way the presumption is triggered is if these basic matters are met and the cancers themselves are limited. So if you got a firefighter who's had cancer of the skin, for example, prior to being hired, this presumption is not the same. This presumption can only be effectuated when that firefighter has completed 5 years of service and has been shown at the time he was hired, he doesn't have it. That's how they can presume it. You know, when we get into this case, and I heard the word risk cause used, if you're used interchangeably and incorrectly, risk does not equal cause. In my various briefs that I've submitted, I've directed this court to Nickerji, wrote, ironically, a bestseller about cancer. And that's what he wrote. And it was The Emperor of All Maladies. And he made clear, you know, he said, look, you cannot equate risk with cause. Why? You can't find a cancer prevention lifestyle, even though we thought we could. He also says statistical methods to identify risk factors for cancer are, by their very nature, descriptive rather than mechanistic. They describe correlation, not causes. It couldn't be clearer in this case. Dr. Mayer disagreed with Dr. Milligan, made it absolutely clear that, in her view, Dr. Milligan was making a basic medical error, confusing risk with cause. They're not the same. Black's Law Dictionary doesn't define them the same way. The dictionaries don't define them the same way. And the medical personnel that are experts in this area, and that's from Schoenfeld's big book on cancer, which you read it and it's not going to keep you up at night and wanting to finish it off. But the reality is there is no equivalence between risk and cause. Statute presumes causation. We believe in Russell. I assert that Russell was right in that determination. And you cannot overcome it by assuming a quantity of risk. And then you have the extra little kicker in the Hurrell case. His twin brother, who's not a firefighter, doesn't have cancer. Okay.
What's the purpose of the presumption that somebody like Harrell, who is a line firefighter, is exposed to the sun and is exposed to soot and all these carcinogens, doesn't get the protection? That's it.
All right, thank you, Mr. O'Toole. And Ms. McKenna, just to make sure you have your opportunity to rebut if you wish, you have 16 minutes.
The city of Littleton case is very different than the case here. The case involves general causation principles. Therefore, the court in that case never needed to address risk factor evidence or analysis of risk factors. They simply stated that based on the nature of firefighting, the fact that respondent or employers are likely unable to disprove this wide and unspecified range of causes or exposures that an individual's been exposed to firefighting that proved through an alternative cause is sufficient to overcome the statutory presumption. They did not address the risk versus cause argument. They did not need to. There was no evidence of other risk factors presented in that case. It was mainly a general causation case that particular individual's brain cancer could not have been caused by firefighting. So we have to basically move on from that case with the understanding that an alternative cause is sufficient to overcome the presumption, and what can constitute an alternative cause, what evidence can establish an alternative cause. And risk factor evidence is directly applicable under the Workers' Compensation Act in establishing causation issues for occupational disease.
It may be in others, but we got to give the General Assembly some kind of credence to the fact that it did want to encourage firefighting. And it knew that exposure to a soup of chemicals and causative agents was involved with that. So the public safety piece of this, don't we have to take that into account? How can we simply assume that based on general population risks that all of a sudden they don't get compensated, when the whole workman's comp thing is that they can't bring torts? And the legislature's done a very, very unusual thing, you'd have to admit this, right, with this particular statute, and did talk about cause, did it not?
In the legislative history behind the statute, there's two different avenues of discussion within that history. The history of establishing the premise behind the presumption itself, one after studying how firefighting is a significant risk factor, and yes, there is a strong social policy behind this statute that can't be denied. The second part of the legislative history, there's a bit of discussion about the burden of proof and how it's the simple shift in the burden of proof. There's actually no discussion about what type of evidence can be considered in determining whether that burden, the presumption was overcome. There's specific testimony in the legislative history that this remains an occupational disease case. There's specific testimony that the burden for employers was reduced to a clear and convincing down to a preponderance of the evidence standard based on the nature that proof of causation of diseases in this context is hard overall. And that testimony indicates the General Assembly understood, number one, yes, they wanted to provide these firefighters with this initial protection, but number two, they also specifically included an avenue for these employers to defend themselves in a case-by-case basis. I think it's important to note that a lot of these cases are admitted, and only in certain specific cases where there's these increased relative risks that are, increasingly higher than the risk of firefighting will they potentially be litigated. And the conclusion of that rebuttal presumption need not be rendered meaningless by an interpretation that results in strict liability, that just because there's an initial presumption imposed, it's not a conclusive presumption, it's a rebuttable presumption. There are other statutes in other jurisdictions, like Minnesota, that have a conclusive presumption, but that is not what was drafted here, that's not what was enacted here. And I think we have to look at both social policies to protect a firefighter, but also to allow the employers the avenue to defend themselves, which was specifically addressed in legislative history here.
Well, these employers are the same employers that are encouraging these firefighters to go in and protect their citizens, aren't they?
They are.
It's
a hard position. I'm not going to stand up here and say it's not. We're, our job here is to effectuate the meaning of the law and look at what the legislature intended and to give it its purpose. And I think if they wanted to enact a conclusive presumption, they would never have included this rebuttable provision. And we have to construe the statute and interpret these cases to effectuate and give meaning to that rebuttable presumption. Otherwise, we will be directly contrary and contradiction of legislative intent.
Counsel, I have a question that just stems from curiosity. You've talked a little bit about the legislative history here, and I'm wondering if that reveals anything about the specific list of cancers that were included and what was not included. I mean, what comes first to mind would be respiratory-related things, and that doesn't appear to be on the list. Is there any insight regarding to that?
It's odd that the respiratory is not included. I agree with that. But they based the statute on the master study. And the master study is what talks about the different systems that are affected by firefighting exposures, and that really was the basis of this statute and the presumption imposed without the master study.
Thank you.
Could I ask you one more question? And this, I think it goes to my understanding of the general scheme, although it may technically go a little more to the last case than this one, but I've been curious. In establishing the presumption, the statute has this part about undergoing a physical exam. Does that, I mean, I guess the question I want to ask is, does that suggest at least that if one does undergo this kind of a physical exam and none of the, and the condition does not show up at all, that that's intended to be a presumption that prior health is not a factor?
I think it's one of the factors in establishing the individual obviously needs the presumption because cancer can only be diagnosed through a biopsy. There's no other way to diagnose the cancer. You can have, you know, risk factors, but you can have all these things developing, like example, in prostate cancer, rising PSA levels. But until that actual biopsy takes place and that diagnosis is made, there's no way to definitively diagnose somebody with one of these enumerated cancers. So I think that's part of the reason that that factor has to be met by a claimant to meet the initial presumption.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. I want to thank you, Ms. McKenna, and you, Mr. O'Toole, for your arguments today. I know through these cases, back-to-back like this is hard, but it's very helpful for the court. And so we appreciate you doing that for us. The court will be in recess until 1:30.